Thank you, Your Honor. David G. Cox. I'm an Ohio attorney. I'm appearing in Pearl Hawk Beach here. My Ohio attorney number is 00427-24. My co-counsel is Richard Bennett. His bar number is 10904. Co-counsel, may it please the court, I would ask for 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Counsel, you can. I'll try to help you with it, but you can keep your own time just by looking at the digital clock.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Sure.
So I want to start with the first issue about creature of statute and whether or not the Athens Springs Metropolitan District, as a creature of statute, actually does have the authority to prohibit grazing on its land in violation of the fence law.
Excuse me, are you suggesting that they could build a fence if they wanted to, that they have statutory authority to build a fence?
It depends. The authority to build a fence would have to be related to the existing authority they have as a metropolitan district.
Well, I'm asking, what's the answer to that question?
Well, it depends. They have authority to construct roads, and they have authority to provide water and sewer services. Those are the only, that's the only express statutory authority that the district has under the Special Districts Act. So if they wanted to keep the roads clear by putting fences around the roads, they could do that.
I'm asking about the green space.
No, Council. They don't have the authority to do that, Your Honor.
Okay. So there's no way that they can prevent your client's sheep from being on the green space.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, I know Aspen Springs has argued that they're a Parks and Recreation District, and if they were a Park and Recreation District, then they could install a fence to preserve the open space as a Park or Recreation District. And a Park and Recreation District is one of the types of districts a metropolitan district can pursue, but in this case, there's no evidence that they're even a Park and Recreation District.
Well, one of the witnesses said that they were a Park and Recreation District.
I don't believe it was one of my witnesses, Your Honor. It might have been one of the district's witnesses, but it wasn't one of mine. I've searched the Colorado.gov website, and I've gone to the Department of Local Affairs website, and I've actually researched
that. That's not in the record, is it?
Well, that's the thing. There's no evidence in the record.
No, but there's no evidence that there's no evidence in the record, right?
You could take judicial notice of what's on the Department of Local Affairs website. And I've gone there, and it's kind of convoluted to get there. You go to Colorado.gov, Division of Local Government, and on the left side of the page, you go to Local Government Services, then you go to Special Districts, then you click on Administration, then you scroll down, you click on the link that says Special District Financial Information, and then under that link, Aspen Springs and all the metropolitan districts come up in alphabetical order. Once you get to Aspen Springs, you can click on Filings. And then once you get onto Filings, and you click on the tab that says Service Plan. And under the Special District Act Part 2 program, it requires a metropolitan district to submit a service plan for approval to the county commissioners. And that is in 32.1-202. The plan has to contain a description of the proposed services. And under 32.1-203, it says that the county commissioners reviews it. And under 32.1-204, it says the county commissioners has to schedule a public hearing where they discuss the service plan. And then after conclusion of the public hearing, the county commissioners has to take action on the plan.
So let me just cut through your argument a little bit and make sure I understand the breadth of your argument. So you don't dispute that the district here can acquire and own property, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Can they put up a no trespassing sign?
No.
So is it your contention that they can't, other than owning the property, they can't do anything else with it?
That's right, Your Honor. That's under the statute that was provided.
I mean,
1004.
So under the concept of we can't reach a conclusion that's an absurd result, isn't that just an absurd result? I mean, how can that possibly be that the legislature said, yeah, we're giving you the authority to acquire and own property, but you can't do anything with it?
That's not an absurd result because it's not in the statute, Your Honor, and the district makes the point that corporations and LLCs have this right. But when you look at the language that grants authority to for-profit corporations, 7-103-102, paragraph 1D, this gives authority to corporations to purchase, receive, lease, and otherwise acquire, and to own, hold, improve, use, and otherwise deal with real personal property.
So you're saying they can't even own it, because the statute doesn't use the word own.
No, I'm not saying that.
The statute doesn't say own. They
can acquire it. They can acquire it by gift.
But they can't use it, and they can't regulate it, and they can't keep anybody from getting on it.
It depends on what property they have. If they have properties and they're going to turn them into roads, yes, they can place a no trespass sign.
What if they have offices? Can they establish business hours and prevent people from just coming in and making themselves comfortable in the offices and maybe bringing a sleeping bag and sleeping in
If they're going to use those offices as an incidental power necessary to perform their statutory duty to provide roads and water and sewer services, yes, they can do that. But they are not a park and recreation district. When you look at the DOLA website, the service plan was submitted in 1979.
Was that evidence that offered at trial?
No, I'm asking the court to take judicial notice of it. Because this is the only evidence of what type of district the Aspen Springs Metropolitan District is.
Did you give notice to counsel that you were going to be asking us to take judicial notice of this information?
No, I did, Your Honor. I didn't see that in the rules. That plan was approved in 1980, I believe, and it expressly says we're going to put in roads and we're going to provide water and sewer services. Now, in 2006, I believe, the district submitted an amendment to its service plan to the county and asked to have included the authority to provide for parks and recreation. But that was never acted on by the county. And that document is also available on the website. So when you look at the authority that's given to them under the Special Districts Act, 32-1, I think it's 1001 F, and this is really the only instance where it talks about personal property. To acquire, dispose of, and encumber real and personal property. So because they're not a park and recreation district, they can't do anything to the greenbelt. No matter how distasteful that might be for the court, but as a creature of statute, and the Supreme Court of Colorado has addressed that on at least two occasions. Creatures of statute have only that express authority, and they can only do that which is expressly given to them by the General Assembly. And they analyze that in two specific cases involving metropolitan districts.
You do say that they can own property, right?
Yes.
And they do own it in fee simple. There's no dispute about that.
They got that from the county.
And it's certainly the case that it's an essential element of property ownership that you have the right to exclude others from that property, correct?
Depends, Your Honor. That's the argument the district is making. And the district cites cases in its brief where that proposition fits for individuals.
Why does it work for a special district? If it has the right to own property, why can't it exclude others from the property?
Because it hasn't been given that authority, Your Honor. It doesn't have the authority to regulate the use of the property. What is the district going to do? Is it going to say, if you have 5 sheep per acre, then you can graze our property? Or are they going to say, if you have, you know, more than 10 acres on the green belt, well, then you can graze sheep on our property? And is it just Aspen Springs that's going to be doing this? Are there going to be other special districts throughout the state of Colorado which are going to prohibit grazing on open ground? They can't do that.
Mr. Cox, I understand your argument to be that the district can only do what it's expressly allowed to do by statute.
No, well, not exactly. They have express authority, but they also have implied authority necessary to carry out that express authority. So if the express authority doesn't exist, then the implied authority doesn't exist.
What about section 32-1-1001, paren 1, N, that says express powers shall not be considered as a limitation upon any power necessary or appropriate to carry out the purposes and intent of the Special District Act?
Your Honor, I would argue then that that's contrary to what the Supreme Court has already held.
And then, well, that's the statute, right?
And then
the Special District Act says that it was enacted with the intent for special districts to promote the health, safety, prosperity, security, and general welfare of their inhabitants and of the people of the state of Colorado. So wouldn't putting a fence around the green space possibly be allowed or provided for the health, safety, and prosperity of inhabitants within that district?
It depends, Your Honor, on the type of special district they are.
When you look, this is just the Special District Act itself that says that.
No, Your Honor, because, and I hate to beat a dead horse, but
at least it's not sheep.
A special district, all special districts can do at least two things: provide for streetlights and provide for traffic controls, and that's it. Now, if they want to do something else, they have the choice of doing two or more things, and those two or more things can be fire protection, mosquito control, parks and recreation, safety protection, sanitation, solid waste disposal, and so on and so forth. So it's up to the special district to decide what type of services it wants to provide. It can't just fence off a greenbelt if the only services it's going to provide are going to be, let's say, mosquito control. So it depends on the type of services they choose to perform. And that's how they get their taxing authorities, type of services they're going to perform.
What if the type of service that they want to perform is to provide a green belt for their residents?
Well, that's not in the Special District Act, but the Parks and Recreation is. However, when the district submitted an amendment to its service plan to Archuleta County to include a provision for providing parks and recreation, the county never approved that. So the district doesn't have the Parks and Recreation Authority. If we also look at the fence law, Your Honor, we have, I believe it's 35-46-102. The fence law basically says, Your Honor, everything's fair game for grazing. If you don't want animals on your property, you have to put up a fence. If you don't put up a fence, the owner of the animals is not going to be liable in trespass for any damage that his animal causes. So let's try to square what Judge Lyman did in the court below when he issued his declaration, when he issued his final permanent injunction, with the fence law and with the authority of the district. The authority can't just willy-nilly wave a wand and say, this area is off limits. They either have to put up a fence, if they have the authority to do that, or if they have the authority to provide parks and recreation services, they have to regulate that space that serves as a park.
So your client could bring 1,000 head of buffalo or 1,000 swine and have them run at wild, have them run at freely over all the property in that within the municipal district, whether or not it's owned by the district. There's no remedy other than they're putting up a 3-bar wire fence around each individual property. Is that correct?
Under that hypothetical, Your Honor, which isn't the facts of this case, but under that hypothetical, yes, because the fence law allows them to do that.
Counselor,
I'm saving time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Thank you. You've got just a little less than 2 minutes for you.
1:54. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Catherine Burke, registration number 35716 on behalf of Aspen Springs Metropolitan District. We'll just dive right into what was apparently interesting to the court to start off with, which is this issue of the district's powers. And a couple of things I would point the court to, section 32.1.1004, sub 3, states that any metropolitan district providing parks and rec services, quote, shall have all the duties, powers, and authority granted to a parks and recreation district. There's some ellipses in there, but you'll find that at subsection 3. By virtue of the deed for the greenbelt from Archuleta County, which was conditioned on using it for parks and open space, recreational purposes, the exact quote is in the brief, the district started doing that in 2003 when they took ownership of the green belt.
Council, did the other side ever contest that the Parks and Recreation power resided in the special districts in the trial court?
No, and in fact, my note here says none of this was raised below. I had no notice, this judicial notice thing. So no, it's totally inappropriate, but I thought I would answer it to the extent that it might concern me.
Thank you.
And on that note, then I'll go ahead and leave that. I think that section 1004 sub 3 answers the question. As to incidental powers, that's well briefed, I think, in my answer. It's pretty clear, but I did want to point the court to a particular case. In his opening, or maybe it was his reply, Mr. Cox cited the SDI case, appellate level, 292 P3rd 1165. And that was a very tight, restricted reading of express powers. That court case was completely reversed. And by at 339 P3rd 672, our Supreme Court examined this issue of express and incidental powers very carefully, reversed the appellate court, and looked specifically at that 1001 sub 1 sub n subsection that you raised, Judge Hawthorne, and I believe it was Justice Rice said, the express powers enumerated in the Act should be interpreted as empowering a district to act, not as a limitation on the district's authority that can be found elsewhere in the statute. So in other words, the appellate court had read the express versus incidental thing so tightly that the Supreme Court had to say, no, that's not acceptable. And in that case, the issue was the district was receiving revenues, and they agreed to assign those to somebody else. The statute said they could pledge their revenues, and the appellate court parsed that whole pledge is very different from the sign, and therefore it's not in black and white, you can't do it. The Supreme Court said absolutely not. For all these reasons that you had mentioned, there's another subsection that I'm afraid is escaping my mind of that 32.1.1001 section. There's one of the subsections says something about enacting rules and regulations to carry out the business. That was another persuasive part for the Supreme Court as to those powers. And I think the bottom line is the things that you, all of you hit on immediately, is the absurdity and the waste that would result from special districts being able to own property and not be able to regulate its use or exclude others, whether it be buildings or tractors or real property, either one. And these issues were considered by the trial court. They were briefed by Mr. Cox, and in the order that's in the record at pages 357-61, the court very carefully went through all of this and reached a very reasoned, supportive decision on that issue. So if there are no more questions on that, I'm going to move on from there. The other important piece Mr. Cox talked about is the fence law. And it is and has been his position, as well as his clients who represented himself pro se for the first part of this whole suit, that the fence law says that anybody can graze anywhere that there's not a fence. And that is absolutely 100% wrong. Subsection, that statute is 3546.102. The second subsection clearly defines instances of compensable trespass by livestock. Let me back up. There's two important factors. First of all, that statute is entitled Owner May Recover for Trespass. It is about what the landowner can do. It prescribes one, or it prohibits or limits, carves out one thing. If I don't have a fence and your animals inadvertently, unwillfully, unforeseeably wander onto my property, I cannot get trespass damages from you, direct financial damages from you, the owner. That's what subsection 1 of the statute says. However, I can drive those animals away. I can collect them and hold them. I can call the brand inspector. I can take them to the sale barn. I can I have immediately a lien against you, the animal owner, for their care. I have all kinds of remedies, because it is a trespass. And in fact, subsection 1 says specifically, there's no financial damages for the landowner for, quote, such a trespass. It is a trespass. But if I don't have a fence, a lawful statutory fence, and if the animals were grazing properly And if, without any willfulness on the part of their owner, came onto my land, then there's one remedy that's prescribed to me. But all the rest are available, and in fact, there are more. Then we go to the second.
So, just to be clear, so you're saying it is possible under subsection 1 to get an injunction?
Correct.
Regardless of whether it was inadvertent or otherwise, so that you can't get damages.
That's how I would read subsection 3, which provides some specific remedies. Subsection 2 then makes an exception to subsection 1 and says in certain cases, a livestock trespass is compensable by the livestock owner. And there's two instances. One is my animals are in an unfenced area and I have too many. I knowingly overstock my property, knowing that they are going to go onto yours. That is a compensable trespass. And number two is, regardless of the presence of a fence, if I willfully put my animals on your property where I know I have no permission, that is a compensable trespass. And that is the second half of subsection 2.
But subsection 2 says he shall be deemed a trespasser and should be liable in damages and subject to injunction. So does that mean that you have to satisfy one of those two provisions of subsection 2 in order to get an injunction? That is overstacking or willful?
Well, I would have to open up subsection 3, because subsection 3 provides. So in subsection 3, it says all damages sustained on account of the foregoing trespasses. So I would submit that under subsection 3, you can get an injunction even in the absence of one of the two.
Well, it refers to, in the subsection 3, that first line refers to foregoing trespasses. Isn't that referring to the immediately preceding state sentence?
Well, it may, but in subsection 1, it is a trespass as well. So why would it refer only to the immediately preceding subsection? But I think the main point is that's not our facts here. And this is another point I wanted to really clarify, because it's not, I don't know that it comes clear in the briefs. The kind of grazing that's an issue here, I want to be very clear. And I'll point you to where you can find this in the record. Before the preliminary injunction was in place, and I will submit since it's been stayed on appeal, Mr. Keno grazed in a particular way. Mr. Keno's property is fenced. And not the green belt, but his abutting 2.5 acres is fenced. The only way the sheep get from Mr. Keno's property onto the green belt is when he opens his gate and allows them to go out or drives them out or whatever. He has to take an affirmative action for those sheep to get onto the green belt. And so any intimation other than that is false. And you can find that in the record, in the transcript, at pages 475 to 78, 490 to 92, page 501, page 523. And the trial court made specific findings of fact to that effect. It's not as clear as that, but to the effect that Mr. Keno purposely grazed his entire flock of sheep on the green belt. You can find that in the court record, half of the record, at pages 34, 113, and 437 to 38. And then
but Ms. Counsel, let me ask you, Mr. Keno, on page 2 of his opening brief, says that his sheep did not intentionally or willfully graze the green belt. And he says, they have a mind of their own, and they unintentionally grazed on the property. Is that supported in the record anywhere?
Well, that's a good point. And what I was just going to say is there was once the preliminary injunction was in place, a new kind of grazing methodology arose, which is that Mr. Keno, according to him, there was conflicting testimony, but giving him the benefit of the doubt, he tried to drive his sheep from his own property to somewhere else where he had permission to graze. And in doing so, he would come near to or across a piece of the green belt. And in that instance, his story was, oh, they got away from me. I couldn't keep close enough tabs on them. They sort of inadvertently, non-willfully stepped onto the green belt. That was only the case during the short period that the preliminary injunction was in place, number one. Number two, the evidence at the preliminary injunction, or I'm sorry, the contempt hearing, I called it the trial in my brief, the evidence was the sheep were seen milling about grazing unattended for minutes at a time, 3, 4, 5 minutes, which doesn't sound like much, but as we all know, if you sit still and silent for 4 minutes, well, it's quite a period of time for a sheep herder to be ignoring his sheep. So his story is he was carefully driving them and they accidentally went onto the green belt. That's not really what the evidence is. That's not what Judge Denver found in the contempt hearing. But more importantly, without the preliminary injunction in place, it was just open the gate and send them out all the time. And it's not 25 or 30 sheep. It's 25 or 30 sheep in the winter, and then those female sheep have lambs. We're talking somewhere between 60 to 90 sheep, depending on which witness testified at which point. And again, that's a finding of fact by the trial court specifically. And the preliminary injunction order itself, and I believe also in its final declaratory judgment order.
Counsel, let me, at the risk of interrupting you too much, let me skip ahead to a later issue in the briefs, mm-hmm. and that's the attorney fees issue. Mm-hmm. Were there any remedial sanctions imposed by the court here that would then trigger an award of attorney fees?
That's a key and difficult issue, and you can see in the transcript, particularly Judge Denver, at page 80 of the transcript, struggling with this, trying to figure out how to apply the rule. We asked for remedial sanctions. We presented evidence of actual damage to the greenbelt and the cost that it would be to replenish the vegetation, etc. He found that we didn't reach that by preponderance of the evidence. So he didn't give us those actual damages. But what he attempted to do was impose what in his reasoning was a remedial sanction, which was this. Mr. Keenan, you're gonna go to jail for 30 days unless you recompense the district by paying their attorney's fees. And his reasoning was, and he's looking at the intention, and the intention of the rule, remedial sanctions, is to make the injured party whole. And he cited ICORN 56P3rd at 126. And he was struggling with, in a case like this, this is a very difficult situation. We have a negative injunction. We have, you were not supposed to do something, and he did it. So how do we take that away? And then, we believed that we had actual damages, but he didn't agree with us on that score. But the district was injured, spent about $5,000 to simply bring the contempt to the court's attention. And it was significant.
But you didn't sue him for damages.
No, we did not sue him for damages.
Which you could have done.
We could have done. We chose to take a different route specifically to solve this legal issue. And to be quite frank, this is Mr. Keenan's a member of the district. They were not excited to sue in an adversarial way one of their own members. So the intent was, can we just clarify the law here? And then all this craziness with the contempt ensued thereafter. But my point on the fees, the Webb case that cited, the People v. Shell case, these are tough for us. They make Judge Denver's order look difficult. But what I would submit is, first of all, to look carefully at the transcript in page 80 and the surrounding pages as he really worked through in his mind trying to make that work, and his actual order at 376 in the record. And the bottom line is it's a very strict application of the rule that's stated, particularly in Shell. In a case like ours where it's a negative injunction, it's totally unfair. It works great for something like a child support order. You know, you didn't do it, pay the support, and then as soon as you're, if you do that, then you escape the other sanctions. Oh, and here's your attorney's fees, injured party. In our case, he can't, as Mr. Cox said, he can't undo the grazing. So guess what? We're just out of luck by a quirk of the facts that we cannot get compensated the way D2, 107D2, and ICOR contemplate, simply because the quirk of the facts here is it was a negative injunction, and he grazed the sheep, and we didn't quite bring all the evidence, but that is really inequitable way to treat this injured party, as opposed to, for example, a custodial mother who didn't get her child support.
Can I ask you a question real quickly? Does the permanent injunction prohibit Mr. Keno from allowing his livestock to wander onto property that is not owned by the district?
I see my time is up. Do you want me to speak to that? Yeah, I mean, I will concede, I'll be one of the first to concede, that the permit injunction is inartfully written, and it would seem to encompass other people's property, and it would seem to encompass in it wandering, which is not a willful trespass. It suffices, when I look at the test, particularly the test of the Shell case, well, first of all, I submit that they should not raise below, but you have that briefed, you can decide. Secondly, I'd point to Shell 148 P3rd, 162. The tests for a vagueness challenge are pretty big. It has to be unconstitutionally vague beyond a reasonable doubt. It has to be facially void only if it's incomprehensible in all of its applications. It's vague as applied only if the person subject to it cannot, with sufficient clarity, understand the context, or the, I'm sorry, the conduct being enforced. I don't think it, I think it meets those tests. It's inartful, but I think it's basically adequate. However, the solution, if you disagree with that, the solution is easy. The judge, in his final order, he had two statements, the declaratory judgment statement, this is what the law means in this context. All he has to do is a simple remand to him to rewrite the injunction to match more carefully what he said the statute says, which has to do with willful trespasses, and as opposed to the loose way he wrote it. I think it barely passes the test, but if you don't like it, ask Judge Lemon to rewrite it. He's got all the ingredients right there in front of him.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Mr. Pop, you've got a little less than 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Romer case on page 14 of our brief especially says implied powers are to be construed narrowly. The SDI case, if it has been overruled, I wasn't aware of it at the time we submitted the brief, and we argued it back in the trial court. That's a 2012 case, so I'm not sure when, if ever, it was overruled.
Well, there's a site, apparently, for that, that it was overruled. Counsel just provided.
Oh, yeah, but I wasn't aware of that, Your Honor. Otherwise, I wouldn't have mentioned it in my brief. We did raise the issue below over and over and over. The district doesn't have any authority to do what it's doing, whether it's a park and recreation, whether it's water and sewer. We said over and over, there's no evidence in the record, Your Honor, what kind of district this district is. We don't know what kind of authority it has. We even mentioned that in our brief, and we mentioned it in our reply. Page 17 in our brief, we mentioned it. Page 3 in our reply, so it's not new today for oral argument for the first time. The injunction is overly broad. I think you got counsel to admit the injunction is overly broad, so if it's overly broad, then it's invalid. If the declaration that Judge Lyman issued is that when he read defense law, the trespass has to be intentional, then Mr. Keno can't even be found in contempt of court because there's no finding by the court that he intentionally allowed the sheep to graze. In fact, the court mentions the opposite.
The counsel, he didn't, he wasn't held in contempt for violating a permanent injunction. He wasn't held in contempt for violating a preliminary injunction.
That's another issue, Your Honor. The preliminary injunction moots out, or the permanent injunction moots out the preliminary injunction.
And what's your authority for that? Is that in your brief?
We made the argument to Judge Denver. We asked him to reconsider. Because he made a contempt finding, and he was going to issue sanctions, and between the time of the contempt finding and the issuance of sanctions, the final permanent injunction came out, and I argued that that mooted it out. Didn't agree.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. Very helpful. The case will stand submitted. We will issue an opinion in due course. That concludes our docket for this afternoon, and the bailiff may announce a recess.